Great. Thank you for coming. I'm going to entertain and educate in the next hour about messaging and stream processing in Azure. I am the architect in the messaging team at Microsoft. We own a number of services, and I'll talk about the services that we have and also about use cases for messaging and how we see the services that we have kind of in the context of industry and also how they kind of relate to the rest of the industry. So first, as a definition, because there's two kinds of messaging, the messaging we talk about is really not this one. It's not IM messaging, because that's a big field, but it's really about application-to-application messaging. Something that often powers these IM kind of systems, stuff that sits at the bottom of this. So we're talking about application-to-application messaging systems, and there's various forms of these. So the Azure messaging services that we provide are threefold. There's messaging, or service bus, where we provide publish, subscribe, enterprise messaging with rich features that I will explain to you. The second is Event Hubs. It's a large-scale event ingestion engine which allows you to take literally billions of events and pull them into Azure, into the cloud for processing, or just store them away as you learn. And then we have a service where we have a brand new capability that's actually the service that we started with in 2007 in incubation called the Relay. And the Relay is a service that provides you with a live socket connection across firewalls and across NATs. And that's something I'm going to demo for you towards the end of the talk. And you can participate if you like. So to start off, let's talk about some use cases, a brief history of messaging and what messaging is really used for, and what we also see in the cloud. And there's a change taking place that we see obviously towards the cloud and towards hybrid applications, where we see more and more that the workloads start to mix. That you have traditional workloads that have only lived on the cloud, only lived in private data centers, now increasingly take dependencies on services that live in the cloud, where they not exclusively completely shift, but they start taking up capabilities. And we believe that messaging is one of those places where you can go and interconnect on-premises workloads through the cloud using messaging systems. So IBM has started this whole messaging thing as a product back in the 60s, before the with the big wave of space programs that needed a lot of large systems. NASA funded a lot of that work. As it became kind of commercially viable outside of those scopes, there were a number of products that kind of pioneered messaging-oriented middleware, MQ series, which still exists from IBM in all kinds of variations. Microsoft had, in 1997, its first release of the Microsoft Message Queue as part of Windows, which still ships inside of Windows. There's TIBCO, there's BizTalk, there's RabbitMQ as an on-premises broker or broker that you can run in IaaS in the cloud if you want. And then also, we have Service Bus, and Service Bus is the messaging infrastructure that we own and that I'll be talking about. In terms of where messaging is used, is very many different industries that use messaging to drive the core of their business. For instance, interbank transfers. If you do money transfers between banks, that's driven by messaging systems, highly specialized messaging systems that are operated by specialized companies that do that. Order fulfillment, trading, settlement, pricing updates, and quotes are all things that are happening through messaging. And they happen through messaging because you need to have a secure transfer. So you cannot risk that you lose an order, which because that message, that digital message, is equates to money. So you need to protect it in the system. Second, all of those things happen in bursts. So you can't process them necessarily in the same speed that they're generated. So you need to have a buffer somewhere that can keep them, and that's what the messaging system is for in those environments. In utilities and telecom, Customer information systems, billing integration, when people are making calls and lots of calls, all that billing data, before that gets processed, before that actually gets on your bill, it gets buffered, queued up in these queuing systems. Smart meters and grid, command and control, and logistics, order processing, delivery notifications, inventory management, routing, insurance, enrollment. Again, that's a digital document that is worth money. So that is also kept in queuing systems and handed off to other systems. It's all kind of digital documents that are being routed through queues. Claims processing, risk modeling, regulatory filing, healthcare, medical records, care quality metrics, patient monitoring, diagnostics, all of those things generally run through messaging systems. And in government, the government, specifically intelligence, uses a lot of messaging. Because there's a lot of data to be captured, the way how we, as societies, do things like suddenly raid homes of suspected terrorists is because we kind of know. But you have to capture some information about this. And all of that is also based on messaging, obviously. So Azure messaging has some fairly large numbers. This is numbers that we have in production, and those numbers are probably about a month old, which means they're already bigger. 3.8 trillion requests per week in Event Hubs. So that's now well over four. We have extreme growth rates, like over 10% month over month. We do 6.3 million requests per second, average sustained in those systems. The success rate is getting up to five nines, and the uptime rates are similar. It's something that people aspire to when they run those messaging systems on premises. Those numbers are super hard to achieve, but we're not satisfied with them at all, because if you run that many messages and you have that success rate, you still have billions of errors. So that's a number that we're working on very, very hard to just make better and better and better. Every quarter, we're making that number better. And so we're setting the goal for ourselves to actually get to six nines and seven nines in terms of reliability. We have petabytes in data volume that's also growing. And on our transactional broker, we have 440 billion transactions, message operations per month, which makes ours the biggest enterprise broker in the world. We're in all of the 34 data center regions that we have in Azure. And in most of those larger regions, we have clusters that are typically 256 nodes, four cores each. So we have 1,000 cores that make up one of those large multi-tenant brokers. And then we also have mechanisms to do reserve capacity, but I'll tell you all about that. So who's using all this today? Where is all of that load coming from? I already gave you some of the verticals. There's many more that I have listed in here. Agriculture, forestry, and fishing for observations that are being made of streams and for sensor data that comes in. We have manufacturing. We have lots of gaming. The game Halo 5, when they launched on effectively the launch weekend, they ran 1.1 million events per second sustained through the system, through Event Hub, actually one dedicated Event Hub that they got from us, plus a backup through the system in a sustained rate throughout that launch weekend, and which includes all the telemetry that comes out of the game. What do players do? How do objects move on the map, et cetera, et cetera. So let's go and talk about the individual services and the things that we have. So the first service is messaging, queues and topics, which we call Service Bus. So we have these three services. What we've chosen to do, they all lived under the umbrella name Service Bus to date. And now we've chosen to leave the name Service Bus for queues and topics for the messaging piece and then have event hubs and relays standalone, so you'll learn about all three of them. Enterprise messaging, which Service Bus operates in, is a very mature space. And if you are an enterprise, if you are interacting with enterprises, larger organizations, then you will find some of that enterprise messaging. You will find some of those products in place. TIBCO, WebSphere, MQ from IBM, Red Hat has a number of queuing products. Microsoft BizTalk, Oracle also has queues. So you'll find some of those. And you'll find that there's a lot of use cases for those messaging systems, as I said earlier in the introduction. There's a number of common messaging patterns that people use. So there's load leveling. Load leveling is about sending lots of messages in a burst, and then being able to pull those out from the processing systems as you can process them. So you level the load out. The systems are built to a certain point of capacity, and the queue is effectively evening out that load. Load balancing allows you to go and send messages into a queue, and now you have multiple consumers that are pulling on that queue in parallel, and they will balance that load because, you know, they can take turns in pulling messages off. You can go and expand the number of consumers looking at the length of the queue, and if the queue is empty, you can shrink the number of consumers. So that's actually load-based load balancing and not the, you know, spread your traffic like a fire hose load balancing that's happening on the web. You can filter messages. You can elect not to process them if they don't fit certain conditions. You can partition the system with it. You can do scheduled delivery. You can go and send messages to a particular point in time. You can fan out, get one message in, send it to multiple, send copies to multiple receivers. You can do routing. Choose where you want to send the message based on certain rules. You can do claim checks. If a large blob, a gigabyte large file, and you want to transfer that to someone, store it somewhere, and then now go and send a pointer to it to a receiver who wants to go and process it. You can realize workflows, steps that you store in the queue that you realize with the queue, and actually doing the workflow state machine, drive the workflow state machine through queues. You can do taps. You have a mainline set of message processing. You put a tap on the side where you can go and pull messages out for auditing and observation. You can use it for logging. Messages that are faulty or cannot be delivered can be put into dead letters. Sequencing, correlation, and expiration. If you have messages that are not picked up in time for processing, you can expire them and potentially dead letter them. So these are typical things that most of the queues, these enterprise message queuing systems support. Service Bus supports all of those in the cloud. Plus, we have an additional set of capabilities. For instance, forwarding. You can have a queue, and you can configure a queue, or you can configure a topic subscription. I'll explain that in more detail. You can configure that to forward automatically to a different place, to a next queue. Which means you can go and route. You can create routing patterns inside the system. We have deferral, which allows you to take a message out. You realize that you can't process that message. You can put it to the side in the system, transactionally safe, and then you can resume processing on that later. We have session support, which means you can go and string messages together logically in a queue, and you can go and lock them all together. We have session state that you can set with that. We have batching support. You can create a queue, and the queue goes and auto-deletes itself if it becomes idle for a long time. We have an API that allows you to be called kind of in a reactive fashion instead of you pulling. We have duplicate detection, filtering. We can do actions on filters, and we have full transaction support. And over half of those features, and this is not even an exhaustive list, are exclusive to Service Bus. No other broker has them. So not only do we have the biggest broker of that class in the cloud, we also have the most featured broker overall. So what we give you with that is messaging as a service. And we're pretty clear about this in that we provide Service Bus with all of its features updated as an Azure service in the cloud, which is reachable from anywhere. You can use that for Azure workloads, but you can also use it for your on-premises workloads if you like. We run that for you. There is a product that we have. There's a download you can get if you want to that is called Service Bus for Windows Server, which we released about 3 years ago. What we're effectively doing is we say that is not the path forward. Our path forward is Azure, which means the follow-on to that version will be Azure Stack and Azure. Azure Stack being our services delivered on-premises in an environment where we kind of prescribe a combination of hardware and software. And that's kind of the smallest iteration that you can get of that. And otherwise, we deliver that service out of the cloud because we believe that that's the right way to do this. So it's a messaging as a service without compromise service that you can use from anywhere where you have a network connection and where you can improve the reliability, if you are worried about that, having redundancy in your network connections. We can run this service more reliably than you can run a messaging server in the cloud and on yourself. And we can run it at lower cost. So just for anybody who is not completely familiar with the theory, here's a queue. A sender sends a message into the queue, the receiver. So the queue acts now the receipt. Let's go back. Oop. So sender sends a message into the queue. And now there's an acknowledgement that gets back to the sender. The sender is now confident that that message has been kept. As soon as we send you the ACK, we give you a fast guarantee that we will never lose that message again. And when we ACK, that message has been triply replicated in our store, which means if we lose one of those stores, we always have a place to go back to. So that's a hard guarantee there will be no message loss. Then the receiver can go and pick up that message and will then complete the operation. And when the receiver says, I'm done with that, then we will remove that message, but not before that. So that's a safe transactional handoff. And you can actually wrap that with a transaction that we govern from inside the system if you have multiple operations. What we also make possible is you can take a message from one queue, process it, and you can put the resulting message into another queue and bind that with a transaction, which is a unique feature in the cloud that nobody else has. So we actually allow uniquely to create distributed transactions governed by a queue system with our broker. Topics and subscriptions. The topic looks like a queue from the front. The protocol is exactly the same. We're using AMQP. The AMQP 1.0 protocol or HTTP to send messages to it. Looks exactly like a queue. What's different here is that a topic has multiple outs and you can go and create them and they're called subscriptions. Generally, the sender only knows about the topic. There's decoupling here by principle. And the subscribers, they know only about the subscriptions. And the subscriptions are being created with a filter optionally, that allows them to kind of look at the properties of the message, the metadata of the message, and then only select those messages that are interesting to them. So you can go and create taps by saying, I want all messages, or you can filter them down to particular aspects that you're interested in. And if you create your filters in a particular way, make them mutually exclusive, you can also create partitioning with those subscriptions. Actions are something that's also an exclusive feature. And actions allow you to modify the message when a filter matches. So we have the match type equals order. So type refers to a property, order to the value of that property. And if that matches, you can optionally add an action, which now modifies properties of that message as it's being selected. So what's new in messaging? since, if you are familiar with Service Bus and have worked with it already, we've done a bunch of new things. First of all, it's in the new portal now. That's something that's work that has taken us a long time, long story. So it's in the new portal, portal.azure.com. I'll get to that as I do the demo towards the end, so I'll show you that. We have full support for the Azure resource model. You can go and create queues, complete topologies using ARM templates. And we went GA, general availability, with our premium offering. So we have three offerings, basic, standard, and premium. Basic is effectively the full system that the full system capability that we have in terms of protocol, and the same queuing model was the same API, but constrained effectively to the feature set that you will also find with the Azure queues or with SQS. So SQS is Amazon's queuing service that is about equivalent to our Azure queues, which are part of storage, and Basic is effectively the Service Bus equivalent from a feature perspective to those two services. Standard gets you more features, so it gives you topics, it gives you PubSub, which is something that you don't get with Basic, and you get included messaging operations in that price. And with Premium, you get dedicated capacity, you get reliability built in. So what is Premium for? Premium is about predictability. Our system messaging is run as a multi-tenant system. That's how we can make it cheap for you, right? So as I said, those cluster sizes are up to 256 nodes, up to 1,000 cores that we run as one broker for you. And when you create a namespace, which is how your subscription kind of gets a tenant in that system, we'll allocate some resources for you, but you are being treated like everybody else on that same cluster. You get a queue, and your neighbor may have a queue on the same machine. That's how we do this is how standard works. Premium elevates this. So Premium is doing two things. First of all, it has a brand new storage engine. Second, it ring fences resources for you. You no longer pay per transaction, but you actually pay for pre-allocated resources. And pre-allocated resources means you pay for a reservation of CPU and you pay for a reservation of memory. Because with all the features that I just showed you, what messaging is really gated on is not I/O. Our storage engine is faster than what we can feasibly do with messaging in terms of the compute load. So it really is a compute and memory-bound thing. So what we allow you to buy is memory and CPU allocations, what we call messaging units. But in turn, you don't pay for any transactions anymore. So it's a different pricing model. But since you get reserve capacity now, everything becomes predictable. Because nobody can go, a noisy neighbor can no longer steal your compute resources. So it's a much better model if you need high reliability, if you need consistent performance, then that's why we build Premium. It gives larger messages, so you can do messages up to 1 megabyte. Well, in standard, we only let you do 256K. We will deliver a lot of new features only in Premium because if they are really compute intensive, if they are really memory intensive, then we cannot feasibly do them in standard because they will affect too much the other traffic. So there's a long backlog of things we have not been able to do in the normal multi-tenant system just because those features are too computationally expensive. Now that we have a way to kind of ring fence the resources for you, where you get to choose what you want to do and what features you want to use, we're able to do this. Premium also means significantly higher performance because now we can let you go at your speed in the reservation. So I talked about these messaging units. Think of them as just about the equivalent of cores. It's not exactly true because you get a memory allocation, you get a core allocation, and it's not a core that you really reserve because we can move some things around, but it's just about the right picture. With one core, For a queue, so we're just going to go and look at the green bars here. With one queue, you can do 4,400 messages per second with one messaging unit. With two messaging units, you can do 9,000. And with four messaging units, you can do 16,000 messages a second. You see that's kind of linear scale. We currently constrain you to four messaging units. We're working on making more of those messaging units available for you. So that's linear scale that you can go and add by just getting more of these messaging units. Messaging units are constrained on a per namespace basis. So if you just want to go and shard your workloads across multiple namespaces, then you can obviously get higher and higher throughput just by buying more of that capacity. This was send performance. Read performance is even higher on topics. With five subscriptions, you can pull down up to 19,000 messages a second, which is more than competitive for a transactional broker. And the assumption here is obviously for those metrics is that you're sitting in the same data center with your workload, because latency plays a factor in how much data you can go and send. Those test messages that we send are typically 1K in size. That's kind of what we do for our benchmarking. So we don't send them empty. We think that's cheating. So we use 1K in size in payload for those tests. So that was core messaging. So that's a very important pillar for building any kinds of reliable enterprise applications, backends for e-commerce, backends for a lot of things that you might want to build. We strongly believe that in very many cases, you can replace on-premises broker systems today with service bus delivered from the cloud. And if you take a look at what the licensing cost is for the enterprise broker systems that you might run or that you might know, where simply the licensing cost to put that thing into your data center can run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you need to have equipment that is also highly redundant and mirrors disks, and it's got all kinds of tricks, and then you still only get to have a cluster that has a primary machine and a secondary machine. If the primary machine fails, it typically does so just about the same time that the secondary machine fails because they age together, then you're better set up in a system that truly scales up to your needs, that is maintained by us, where the hardware doesn't age to the cluster becoming the cluster kind of rotting away with time. So we believe that that's a viable replacement for things that you have on premises, even though we deliver it in the cloud and even though your workloads may run on premises. So EventOps, let's switch gears, a different service. EventOps is part of the overall architecture for stream processing in Azure, which is used for a broad variety of different use cases. We sell this this pipeline effectively under two names, if you will. There's two kind of pivots to this. One is Cortana Analytics, which is the broad name for anything that's analytics, and specifically also stream analytics. And then there's another pivot, which is the IoT suite. So IoT suite is certainly geared towards anything that is devices that sit out in the field somewhere that are not the typical interactive device, but devices that are anything from cars to planes, plane engines, but also sensors that are sitting out in the field and measure humidity or temperature or anything, systems on the factory floor, any of those things, they're fitting into the IoT category. And then effectively everything else fits into the Cortana Analytics category. Under the covers, there's a lot of the same ingredient services, and the core gateway service across all this is Event Hubs. Even the IoT Hub, which is built specifically to maintain many, 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 many millions of concurrent connections into the cloud in one system, is API compatible and protocol compatible for pulling data out with the Event Hub. because those things originate from sister teams that are working very closely with each other. So the IoT team is kind of the team that we work with very closely, and the IoT team actually emerged out of the messaging team. So that from left to right, you have IoT devices or any devices. You have game consoles, any of those things. They come in through some kind of a gateway, potentially. Like the Xbox Live system has a Xbox Live set of gateways that the Xbox Live protocols are being translated through. IoT devices are coming in through cloud gateways, such as the IoT Hub. And then some clients come into Event Hub directly because Event Hub is built to be a firehose service that you can send many hundreds of thousands of events in from very many different devices or many different clients. Come into Event Hubs, and then from Event Hubs, we distribute it in two paths. One is the fast path, the firehose path, which then goes into Stream Analytics, into Apache Spark, Apache Storm, or into whatever analytics engine you want. And that's where it really where time counts, where data is valuable while it's fresh. And then there's the slow path, where we are able with Event Hubs to go and dump the captured data and put that into storage. The function of Event Hubs here is acting as a buffer, taking all the punishment of capturing all the event telemetry data and securing it in the system so that it can then be delivered into the analytics systems as they can. So Event Hub specifically will not do any processing of that data, but it's optimized for capturing the data as it arrives as fast as it can and provide as much capacity as you feasibly can use. So conceptually, Event Hub is partitioned. You can choose the number of partitions that you like. You can create up to 1024 partitions in the system with some help. The partitions, events are being sent into those partitions by those event producers, and the event producers are using either HTTP or the AMQP protocol into the system. The HTTP protocol is fairly simple. The AMQP protocol is also fairly simple, but it requires an AMQP stack. To do this, the AMQP protocol is much more efficient. It's better for firehose delivery of events. If you have individual devices or individual clients that are sending stuff occasionally, then the HTTP protocol is a better choice just because it doesn't have so much setup ceremony for your connection. But AMQP is much more efficient. The partitions are created such that you can think of those as multiple lanes. Right, you have a highway, and if the highway only has one lane, there's a lot of traffic jam. So what you do is you add more lanes, and more lanes mean more capacity. Think of partitions as that. We have a partitioning model which you let us do it, so you don't send messages with any indication what partition you want to go into, so we pick one for you. Now, or you go and label your messages that are coming in with a partition key, which means that we're holding them together. Assigning to a partition means that all the events, which we capture, and which we capture kind of in the order of arrival, will land in that partition. If you want to keep them together, like you have a device and you send from that device, or you have any kind of context, use the partition key and it guarantees that all of those events show up together in one partition, and you can go and pull them down together in one partition. What partitions are not for is for fine-grained PubSub, for fine-grained control for a single entity, but they're really think of them really as lanes on the road. But you can go and segregate. You can say the right lane is just for trucks, but you can't pick a particular truck. And then you have event receivers, and the event receivers come through a lens that's called the consumer group. You can have multiple event receivers, and there's some rules around consumer groups that are too much detail for now. But that's how you receive from those events. In our internal services that we have, the other services that are in Azure, some of which have Event Hub receivers, you don't need to worry about this. So Stream Analytics, for instance, has that all natively built in. You don't need to worry about receiving. You basically just go and go into Stream Analytics. You configure a event hub to be composed with that, and then Stream Analytics will automatically pull the data out. Event hubs can be scaled, and you can control this depending on how much load you need. And actually, we'll give you some pricing examples which will help with that. Throughput units is how we define how much throughput you can buy. And that's the lowest, that kind of the, it's the lowest unit. One throughput unit is the smallest thing you can buy. So you get effectively reserved capacity, and we count that in hours. You can get 1 megabyte per second or 1,000 events per second ingress as a throughput unit. And in egress, you get 2 megabytes per second or 2,000 events per second in egress. So one ingress, two egress. We assume that there's more reading than writing. Because what the event hub does, it's not a queue, it's a log, which means for as long as we retain the data, which we do for up to 7 days, so we keep the raw data for 7 days, you can come back into that log and can reread it. So we have a lot of applications which are using event hubs as a raw data store for some period of time. And we'll go back to the events hub periodically to go into correlation, to kind of reread the history. And if you come to us on request, we can also retain that data up to 30 days. That's not really necessary anymore for most use cases because we have the archive now, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. Those allocations, the throughput units, are namespace-wide, which means you can use those across multiple event hubs. If you go above that, if you go above your allocation, then we start throwing back events, we start throwing errors back at the center. The other component is the number of partitions. They have a maximum capacity, those partitions. More partitions are more lanes, make things faster, potentially. But that's something that's a fixed thing. That's because there's a partition algorithm underneath, and that partitioning algorithm cannot change once the event hub is created. And that actually maps to storage. One partition actually maps to a physical log. The nice thing about event hubs, and that's different to other systems, is that we don't tie the throughput unit, the actual purchase capacity, to the partitioning. So with Kinesis, for instance, you're buying those two things together. You need to pay for the maximum capacity you'll ever need. Here, if you are in, let's say, in retail, and you're preparing for the winter season, well, around Christmas, you're going to have much more happening on your site, which means you can purchase more throughput capacity from us, and you can scale the throughput capacity down again. But that doesn't change the partitioning you have on your system. So we allow you to scale over the system without making you repartition your system as your scale changes. The maximum ingress is 5 megabytes per second, so you can allocate up to 5 TUs onto a single partition. The pricing, complicated. We're going to give you a few examples here. First example, one throughput unit is $22 per month. Oops. What happened? All right. So that gives you 1,000 events per second. So that gives you per month 2 billion events, 2.6 billion events that you can run through that event hub. It's not bad. That's a lot of events that you get for very minimal money. At 1 kilobyte, that's 2.6 terabytes of data that you can go and keep, which we retain for you, right, in 7-day windows. So with of course, you have an included set of events. You have 12 million whatever are included. So you need to go and add effectively the event rate here in addition to the included ones. So all in all, that comes out to 73, 79. And so you get all of this. You get these 2.6 billion events 2.6 terabyte of data throughput for $95, or the equivalent in Swedish kronas, for which it's impossible to run an equivalent Kafka cluster. Impossible to run it. You cannot run that for that price. Think about how much a single VM costs you. And this is triple replicated, right? It's run at a high SLA. There's nobody operating that thing. This is far above and beyond anything you can go and run yourself. There is no equivalence to that in terms of price. Pricing sample two, 1 billion events per day, 12,000 events per second. Well, that comes out to we need to have 12 TUs, right? So, and we need to have that, so that's being priced up. So this is now kind of the daily rate. And that runs up to 3767 for a billion events per day. That's 12 TUs. And we have customers who do more. Now, and for those customers who do more, we have a pricing model that is dedicated capacity, which we're just about to put on our pricing page. So that's something that's a very new capability. We have customers who are coming to us who are vehicle manufacturers, who are game studios, who literally come to us and say, I need to have 1 million events per second. Now, 1 billion per day sounds a lot, but it's not. You know, 1 million events per second, that's something. 500,000 events per second, that's a lot. And they say, well, I need to have that guaranteed. Once you can come to us and get readily from the portal 20 TUs. That's where you can basically just sign up for by just moving a slider. If you want up to 100 TUs, you can call us and say, here, I would like to have this. We're typically going to give that through you to the support channel. If you go over 100 TUs, so 100,000 events per second, we're going to recommend that you go this route, and then we're going to have a private talk about the capacity, and we're going to put a public price on that very soon. So there's currently private pricing around this, and there will be public pricing around this very soon. The reason why that is so, why we are saying from 100 TUs we have to do this, is because there's real capacity at the back of this. It's not, the cloud is not something that's a physics-free environment. It's something that's a real thing. So if you come to us and say, I want to have capacity for 100,000 events per second, that is actually us allocating stuff in a cluster. So that's why we need to have commitment to reserve that room in the cluster for you, and that's why we need to do this dedicated capacity thing. The great thing is, however, you will end up with a uniform workload on that cluster. So for instance, I talked about Halo 5, the launch of that. In the launch weekend of Halo 5, we had nearly 100% reliability and availability on that system with almost no blip in anywhere. Like the graph was kind of pegged at 100%. The reason for that is it's a uniform workload. It's exactly the same thing all over again, which is very good for that system. It keeps it very healthy. It's a well-oiled thing. And you get a lot of jitter from, you know, these multi-tenant workloads, and you can come out of this by having dedicated capacity where we run that for you. So you will see more and more of the Azure services. If you are a consumer of a lot of capacity, we'll be able to go and allocate effectively resources for you in a mostly dedicated way, but still run them as PaaS for you. And that dedicated capacity capability will be available anywhere. So the majority of Event Hub customers end up writing their stream to a persistent store in addition to doing these real-time analytics. So we thought we can help with that. So there's two reasons. One is long-term storage, keeping the events around. And then second, there's need for doing batch processing on those events. So you don't want to look at the event singly, but you want to see all the events that are happened in the last, whatever, 3 days. And you want to go and process them as a batch. You don't want to go and go one by one by one with a CEP engine, like Stream Analytics, but you really want to look at them with Hadoop and cross-reference, et cetera. So for that, we've created Event Hub's Archive. And Event Hub's Archive is designed to meet both of those needs. Effectively, what it is a service extension that allows you, that you basically just configure on an Event Hub as a feature in the portal, that allows you to automatically send Event Hub data to Azure Storage. So you configure an Azure Storage account by activating the Archive feature. And what we'll do is we'll put all of the data that comes into the Event Hub into the Azure Storage account that you give us. The way how that works is we have those partitions that you sent the data into, and we're replicating that data up into storage, and we create these blobs for you automatically. And those blobs are encoded in Apache Avro. So they're written as Apache Avro encoded blocks, which means you can readily pick them up with Hadoop because that's the native storage format that Hadoop is using. So we write them out, and there's a convention, namespace, event hub, partition, and then effectively the timestamp, and that's how you can go and find those files in your own storage account. So we manage that. Effectively, you give us a storage account, and we manage that for you, and that's how you can go and create your archive. And you don't have to worry about that at all. The latency for this is very small. It's in the order of seconds. So we pull the data into our own logs and then copy that over in chunks, but we do this very, very often. So it's a latency that's in seconds. You can do effectively nearly real-time batch processing on this. If you need to have high accuracy, if you need to have low millisecond range latency, you still pull the data out directly from Event Hubs. But Archive gives you effectively a way that's hands-off. You don't need to worry about messaging at all. You basically just look at the storage to go and get your events. So that's all there in the portal. Which is fabulous. So I still have surprisingly much time for the number of slides that I had. Let's talk about the Relay for a moment. The Relay is a fascinating little service that we have had forever, and was the service that we started with. So Azure shipped in January 2010 as a commercially available service. We went into preview in 2008, in late 2008. At the PDC. We had an incubation period before this that started kind of in 2006. The Relay started in 2006. It's the oldest shipping Azure service by far. And we just gave it a makeover. The reason for the Relay being kind of, not everybody knows about it, is because it was tied to WCF. The reason for that is to the Windows Communication Foundation. The reason for that was in 2006 when we started all this, the WCF team started this all. So it started as a WCF service, and then it became, was still a WCF service. And with WCF being a little out of fashion these days, because of all the alternatives, we needed to have some chunk of time and some room and some people to go and redo it, and we finally found that, which is a bit surprising given all the other work that we've done. So now we've renovated the Relay. So there's real good news about the Relay, and I'll show you that after I talk about that for a second. So the Relay is the basis for hybrid cloud, and there's a lot of really cool solutions that are using the Relay. And even though we have not talked about the Relay at all in the last 5 years, in any public forum, the Relay still has a over 10% growth rate month over month by customers who are discovering it and find it magic. And I'll show you exactly why. It's used to decouple location. It gives you additional security, and it gets across VPN and firewalls. And the way it works is there's a client, there's a service. The service listens on the network, but not on the local one, but on the relay one. So it gets through the firewall. If you connect directly, it won't. If you use the relay, then the service will actually listen on the relay. The client will connect to the relay, and then the relay makes that communication happen, and they can do whatever they like with each other. So I'll show you that, if the network cooperates, which is always a thing. Now I need to wear my glasses because I'm an old man. So here's a little app that I'll explain to you, but let me just run that first. It's called the Sensor Feed Reader, and here's Chrome, also because. So we'll hit this. Okay. So, and just to make it fun so that you can see that this is my machine. So if you want to go to SensorFeedWeb, AzureWebsites.net with your phone, that's perfectly okay. Right, you can do that. And if you would, then another plus would appear here. So what I'm now going to do, this is hooked up to my accelerometer, which means I'm going to move that machine a little bit. You get those accelerometer readings. So I'll do that again. Oh, look. There's some people who are proving me right. So there's two additional ones that have, and you should, who's on here? Are you seeing the readings?
Yeah.
Good, thank you. That proves my point. So what did I just do? And you won't see any, so I have to go and move, if you connect, I need to, there's more people, see? So what happens here? What is this witchcraft? I'm creating, let me show the code. And if I type, I'm creating a server. So here's my code. This is in .NET. We also have an API in Node, and we will have one in Java because this is in preview. So here's my hybrid connection listener. I create that on a namespace, and I give it a token provider. Then I accept a connection, which is exactly how socket APIs work, right? You go and listen, and then you accept. And now I add that connection to my list of connections that I have, and then when the accelerometer reading changes, yes, so me and my Twitter notifications, that's perfectly okay. And so if my accelerometer reading changes, I loop through all the connections, so some of the connections that you guys have, right? And then I'm simply writing a JSON text data out to that connection. I do this from this machine, on this network, on the wireless network. I have a listener that accepts connections. Let's look at the client that you all run. The client is this. It's a WebSocket built into the browser. And it has an onMessage function. That is the normal WebSocket API that you have in your browser. And that normal WebSocket API that you have in your browser connects up to the service that I just created on this machine, which is total magic. So this is shipping capability. What we did here is we have a... So what this does here is the following trick. We also have an open documentation for the exact gestures, so you can go and implement that on any runtime that you want. It's a pure WebSocket API. The WebSocket API has three gestures. One is listen, one is accept, and one is connect. And there's two more which are about pinging and replacing tokens, but three main ones. So when I want to listen, what I do is I create a WebSocket into our system, presenting a token, and say listen. And you create with that, you create a control channel. When a connection comes in, so the client shows up with a connect socket, and that's exactly what you see here. Right? So the action here is connect. So you show up with a connect. Then what we do is we match up your request to, in this case, to public. So that's my endpoint that I created, my hybrid connection that I created in the portal. And we'll match that up. And then we send the fact that someone wants to connect to you, we send that as an accept message down that control channel, where the listener will now see it. So it's like an accepting of the Heroku socket. And then you, as the listener, walk back up to the relay and pick up that socket, and now you have a socket connection that's end-to-end created from two WebSockets. Open protocol, documented on our site. You can go and do this from anywhere. But with our abstraction, we give you the full illusion of having a listener through this network. It's a public endpoint that I just created through the relay. Total magic. Imagine the possibilities. The nice thing is it works with the plain WebSocket protocol. Any device, anything that can see the network, that can talk through port 443, and it has a WebSocket stack that supports SSL, can put up a listener, any device. Streaming through and through. I have, and this is a little hard to demo with a single machine, but so for instance, a thing that I'm doing at home is I can pull RDP, Remote Desktop Protocol, with YouTube HD streaming video through that WebSocket link. Not a problem. So bandwidth is, effectively, you need to bring the bandwidth. We have plenty. You need to bring your endpoint bandwidth, and then you can effectively do anything on that link that you like. It's pretty cool. So, in closing, let's go and summarize a little bit in terms of why people use messaging. Telemetry, event processing, they're drivers of the new economy. That's what we believe. It's the promise of IoT is not in individual devices or data points, but collective value. So it doesn't matter all the pieces, but you really want to have that all put together, ultimately. The time value of data is something that's really, that's really interesting to think about. The value of data increases with time, right? But also, it decreases with time. If you have data that's super, super fresh, it's worth a lot. This is what the entire business of Bloomberg is built on, right? Information, financial markets in milliseconds. But 15 minutes afterwards, the value of that data is down here at the bottom because a 15-minute feed you can get from anywhere, and nobody can really go and act on it because it's too old. But then you archive that data, and now you have a basis for doing, you know, financial market predictions, et cetera, so the archive is actually worth something. So Event Hubs and the archive are actually dealing with both of those points. Event Hub Archive is about putting the data away for a long time so you can go and capture value out of it, and then you know, being able to immediately process it is and have direct communication is on the left side of that. And that's also extending to the relay. The relay is really about direct communication, direct connectivity now. That's a feature for there. So Event Hubs and Service Bus and the relay kind of play on that curve. We make data fast, but we also take care of moving data into long-term storage, that sort of data, so you can go and process it later. IoT and big data are inseparable. Both involve data that's both fast and slow, and the Azure messaging piece is really what drives, what underpins the IoT platform that we built. Original V's of three V's of big data: volume, velocity, variety. And then we have a bunch of industry examples. I'm not going to go through those again reading. But for instance, how can this be better? Right? You do this by capturing information. Right? You figure out what the customer characteristics are. You capture information about them. And you improve the experience by collecting data. You do logistics quality control, monitor actual conditions per package create, adjust shelf life to ensure freshness. You go and monitor outbound schedule maintenance, predict generation in the near future, provide intelligent consumer applications. You do all those things by capturing information, by capturing telemetry. And that is what I had for you. So we have three services. They're incredibly important for IoT, for a lot of services that you build that provide enormous value by if you use them in the right context. And I hope this was insightful. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to. I think since I'm not sure we have microphones here, so I'll be happy to entertain them here up front and answer them. I'll be around. And then I'll also be at the Microsoft booth later. Thank you very much.